There is a belief held in Ayurvedic tradition for thousands of years that the body does not need to be fixed, it needs to be listened to. That it is not fighting you, that it is telling you something. And the longer I spend in functional medicine, the more convinced I am that this sentence is one that conventional medicine has forgotten how to say. Today's guest has built her entire practice around this idea, and I think by the end of this conversation, you'll understand why it matters for anyone who has ever been told that their symptoms are nothing to worry about and known in their body that they are. Welcome back to the Good Health Podcast. I'm Nicole Good, certified functional medicine practitioner, author of Optimal You, and founder of the Good Health Clinic. This is the podcast where we take the questions conventional medicine doesn't always have the language for and look at them through a different lens. Today's episode is one I have been genuinely looking forward to recording because the work I do in clinic sits at the intersection of two things: evidence-based science and something that is harder to measure, the recognition that the body is an intelligent system, that symptoms are signals rather than inconveniences, and that healing and managing a diagnosis are not the same thing. My guest today works from that same starting point, but she comes to it from a tradition that predates functional medicine. Brett Aldrich is a breathwork practitioner, an Ayurvedic counselor, and founder of Seed the Spirit. Her work is built around the principle that the body wants to heal, that healing is not something we impose on ourselves, but something we allow when we stop overriding what the body has been trying to say. Her own route into this work came through lived experience, through her own story of healing and resilience. And that matters because I find the practitioners whose work genuinely lands the most is almost always the ones who have walked some version of the path that they are now guiding others through, much like myself. I wanted to have Brett on the podcast for a specific reason. I think too often the conversation about Ayurveda in the wellness space stops at things like turmeric and morning routines and misses the depth of what is actually a complete and sophisticated system of preventative medicine, a system that has been refined over thousands of years, and one that, in my view, has a huge amount to offer anyone who is also looking at things like functional medicine. In this conversation, Brett and I get into where Ayurvedic and Western medicine actually converge and where they diverge, where the ancient traditions can benefit functional medicine, how breathwork affects the nervous system at a physiological level, not as wellness, but as a genuine clinical intervention, and the five small Ayurvedic lifestyle changes that Brett believes can meaningfully shift longevity and long-term health. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you'll hear familiar themes threaded through this one: stress, inflammation, the mind-body connection, and the idea that chronic symptoms are rarely random. This episode takes all of that and asks a different question. What does it look like when we bring a second complementary tradition into the conversation? And what can each of these worlds learn from each other? Let's jump straight into today's episode. Brett, welcome to the Good Health Podcast. It's great to have you here today. Before we kind of get into the clinical conversation, I'd love to talk about your own journey and what brought you to this sort of work. And what does it mean to you when you sort of say that the body wants to heal?
Absolutely. Thank you for the question. Ayurveda, I've been taught by many teachers, it chooses me or finds you when the time is right. It was many years ago. I was at a fork in the road, typically in my own life of professional and personal. And I was going through a process where I was an athlete. So I did a lot of real intense training for most of my life. You know, this intense training included, you know, also with injury, right? Intense training creates intense injury. And I was a stage in my life where I was like, all right, well, you know, this might be my life. I may never do that ever again in my life. And also, you know, I was a mother of three children at the time, and my body was changing. And I was just like, okay, so what do I do now? It was like those moments where, and I was having early stages of discomfort and dis-ease that wasn't diagnosed. I had no idea what was going on. I just knew I was having these symptoms. I couldn't pinpoint what was happening. I was frustrated. I was upset. I was so many feelings trying to understand what was happening, along with chronic pain. I had chronic pain, couldn't figure out why. And I was preparing for surgery, preparing for injections, preparing for all of those things. One day I was just randomly walking in my hometown. I went to a store that I've never been to before. I walk in and I looked down and there was this little card. And the card said, Dinacharya. Dinacharya is a word in Ayurvedic practices of a daily practice. What do you do every day to care for your body? And it just had a list of things to do with bullet points. And I was like, well, I'll try that. Why not? And I already knew what yoga was. I had already practiced yoga. And of course, like for me, it was an exercise as well. It wasn't a spiritual practice. It was also a thing I did when I was injured, right? Like, you know, silly me. I don't know any of these things. But at the time, I was like, I'm injured. I'll do yoga, right? Yeah. So I did those practices, the small parts of just like self-body massage, a few moments of meditation, shifting my diet around a little bit to work better for me and my body and how it operates, working a 24-hour clock. So, you know, sunrise, sunset, understanding that each time of the day has its own energy. You can live your way around that, and knowing that my largest meal is like in the middle of the day where my digestion is most strong. So I was just doing those practices alone. And strangely, I was like, wow, I'm actually starting to feel better. Like the tide starts to change and I didn't realize what I was stepping into. And then all just started to unfold it. I was like, there's so much about this and it's so detailed and so unique. And I was like, all right, this is where I'm going. This is what I'm going to do. And my life has been different ever since.
And what was it when you first encountered the Ayurveda, and what was the thing that was kind of different to Western medicine or Western wellness that really made you sort of shift that perspective? Was there any one thing, or was it just the sort of the accumulation of things?
It was the fact that everything was possible and anything was possible for your healing process. There were so many options for you and ways to go at whatever's going on within you.
Yeah.
It was like everything mattered and everything counted. So it wasn't just one thing that was the issue that I was doing. It was like accumulation of things. And I was like, the moment I was able to kind of pick that apart, I was like, oh, this makes sense. Like it just started to make sense. And when it makes sense, I was like, all right, I'm just going to keep doing this.
Yeah.
So, and that's really what it was. And that it could become, and it did become finite and refined enough that it worked best for me. So I make choices that are best for me. What works best for someone else, they do what they need to do for them.
Yeah.
And I do what they need to do for me. And it became very personal. And the fact is, if you didn't like something, that's okay. You don't like it. And you can try something else.
Yeah.
And that was also there's always an option somewhere to assist you. It's mobile. It's a little artistic as well. You know, like there's a level of artistry with it that I did appreciate, because I'm not very good at memorizing chemistry. Like that was not my thing.
I think having those different options, I think, is really important. I know I say a lot to patients in clinic, you know, because obviously we do lifestyle and, you know, we talk about things, and journaling is brilliant for some people. It doesn't work for everybody. I know personally for me, I can't journal. I won't stick to it. It doesn't happen. It doesn't work. It frustrates me. It's like, and I know it's brilliant. I read the science behind it. I know that it works for a lot of people. I have lots of patients that love it. Just doesn't work for me. It's just not the thing for me. That's okay. You don't have to like everything. You don't have to do everything. Let's just find something that it's the thing that helps you, that works for you, whatever that might be, you know, whether it is yoga or a breath work or, you know, whatever, anything. Let's just find something that is a lifestyle practice that works for you. And I think it's really important there is that flexibility. You know, as much as we can read, you know, the science and stuff like that, we are all different as well as people. And that's really important. I think it's good to have that sort of flexibility in it, I think, anyway, in life generally, but particularly when in sort of healthcare, you know, and things like that, and personalizing it, like you said, really important.
Yeah. And, you know, people come to us, right, with so many different walks of life and so many different experiences. What may be a version for them, it might be connected to something you just don't know, right? And when we go to the more finite understanding, well, my understanding with Ayurveda, it goes to the elements and the description and what those elements are like and the characteristics. So it can get even simpler and then go from there. You know, what, you know, when we say writing in a journal, like for Ayurveda, it's a mind thing. It's in the mind. But at the same time, it's very mobile. The description is mobility and subtlety. And maybe mobility and subtlety may not necessarily be for you today. Maybe you need something more like physical. Maybe you need something more aggressive or grounding, like weightlifting, right? Like something completely opposite from writing in a journal. Maybe you need to lift some weights, which that was such a strange opposite. But it's another option for you if it's something that really is what you may need too, if you have a lot of subtleties and airiness in your life to start.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the relationship then, I guess, between the Ayurveda and the Western medicine, because probably a common assumption is that they are so opposite that you maybe can't do both. You know, you've kind of got to choose a route. But I'm generally not a great believer of this. I'm the same with functional medicine. I don't believe that you can't do conventional medicine and functional medicine. I think you can do both. Where do you see things where it can converge and sort of work together? I think most people probably know the differences, but where do you think the things can kind of cross over?
In terms of like crossing over, I think it's part of like whatever we can supplement and complement with allopathy and Western side, you have an emergency, you go to the ER, you have to go. There's really kind of no looking around it. And, you know, of course, and like the process is we figure out what's going on with you. There's a diagnosis, maybe there's numbers involved. There's all of that stuff going on. And then there's like, okay, we got to get you stable. There's a level of stability that you need to have before they can let you go. But then at that point, they want to catch up with you and see how you're doing after. And there's the question of like, okay, so I know that this is my situation, but what else can I do to support myself while I'm going through this process of maintaining stability and avoiding deep, well, like emergency sickness, but moving towards the process of healing around it?
Yeah.
Really kind of the understanding is what I do a lot of is I work with people in the medicinal sense. However, at the same time, I do a lot of teaching. It really is about understanding how things all work together as a unit, including taking medication or seeing your doctor and carving out a space of like a cushioning around to support you while you're going through the process. And I always feel like it takes a village for anyone to get better for whatever purpose or reason. So I'm not the only one that you can go to. There's so much out there, including myself, that can educate you on how elements work or how these things work together. So you can decide for yourself over time what works best for you while you are trying to maintain the stability and prevent sickness for the future. And the hope over time is you'll see your doctor and your doctor will go, wow, like you've really made some headway. It's really what it is. It's not about like, no, don't go to your doctor. It's more along the lines of like making headway, getting the process of getting better, understanding that it is possible to get better.
Yeah.
And something I really would love people to understand. It is so possible to get better and working with what, you know, your doctor prescribed something. Okay, let's work with it. Understand how it works for them and how it works in your body and then work with it, right? Options. There's a wide range of options to work with this process. And it's not about stopping it. It's about just working with it and getting you towards that process of feeling better and being hopeful that you're going to get better.
And I think that's important. The mental side of it as well is just having that hope is really important. In functional medicine, we talk about finding the root cause. That's sort of what we talk about that a lot, rather than just managing symptoms. Is that a concept in Ayurveda as well? Or is it slightly different? Sort of what's the sort of crossover there?
Absolutely. It is both, but separate. So we do prefer to find root cause, right? Because you want to find the root cause or find the beginning stages or, you know, the why. What's the why here? Where is the why? And the exploration towards why is what Ayurveda is really kind of like, dare I say, famous for or understanding to, like moving towards the center of the body, right? Going towards the center of where it probably began or close to it. And then see how it's like branching out into the rest of your body and your life. Like not just that, but it's everything. It can be anything, right? So finding the deep seed and then trying to extract it, or as we call in yoga, scorch the seed, so to speak. So we try to maintain it so it doesn't have potential of growth. So we want to get to that point of like the word remission, or you don't see the symptoms anymore because you're really maintaining it and you know where it came from. That's where we really want to focus on and do the best we can to get there.
I have a lot of listeners who have things like autoimmune disease, chronic fatigue, burnout, a lot of these chronic longer term conditions. Where does Ayurveda see the origin of the sort of the patterns in those sorts of things? How does it frame what's happening in the body with the sort of chronic illnesses?
You know, what we try to do or what I try to do is that there is that whole like deep connection with the gut and what's going on with processing and digestion along with patterning of behavior. Dare I say, a lot of people that I have run into, just my own experiences, a lot of the people that I run into with autoimmune issues are people that are like deep carers, keep deep lovers, keep deep givers, overgive. Because they care, they get it, they understand. They're just sweet, kind human beings that are just like, you know, going through it. So one of them is we do try to work at and notice and understand digestion, what's going on in their gut and seeing if there's ways to support that because we want people to really be able to absorb the medicine too as well. So if your body can't process the medicine or won't absorb it, it really has to do with what's going on in your gut. Autoimmune definitely can be tricky. And a lot of people that come to me are just exhausted. They're just kind of at that point where just like, I just don't know what to do anymore. And giving them a grain of hope with after they're coming to you, and I'm kind of like their last resort sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, a little
I know that feeling.
What we try to do again is just be kind in return to people that are going through that. And, you know, just listening. You know, a lot of people just want to be heard. A lot of people just want to like just understand what's going on and why. But there's the caring version. And then there's the like, okay, let's be sharp and let's like look and see where the source of this is as well. And see if we can work on, you know, first gut health and go from there and see how their digestion works and how they process. Because sometimes it is about processing and what kind of built up stagnation or inflammation is going on in the body and how to go in that direction as well.
Yeah. You also do breath work. So let's just talk about breath work sort of specifically. Because I think, again, this is one that I think people hear a lot. And actually, I was actually in clinic with a guy today and I mentioned breath work. And I could almost see it in his eyes where his vision automatically goes to somebody sat cross-legged on a, you know, on a mat sort of, you know, doing and, you know, and I could just sort of see his eyes sort of glaze over. And I was like, I know exactly what he's picturing right now. And I was like, instantly, it was sort of like, might not be what you think it is. let's chat about this. You do breath work. So what actually is breath work? What the sort of different types of breath work? What is the kind of, I guess, those misconceptions that people can have around it? And what's it actually kind of doing at that physiological level? Because it's not just a psychological, you know, it's not just a mental thing of sort of calming down. It physiologically impacts the body as well.
Yeah. And there's, again, it's such a deep subject. What I do, again, same thing with Ayurveda, people come to you like, I have no idea what this is. Typically what I run into is teaching people, assisting them and learning how to take a full diaphragmatic breath, just a natural breath. A lot of us, you know, when we go through our lives or something happens, whether injury, physical injury or some sort of trauma, it does store in the body. We have come to that realization and understanding with that too as well. When we breathe, our breathing can be altered by these injurious things that occur, whether to us or within us, right? So there's a level of the, as we say, Schrotompsies or our veins or our parts of the body that create space for openings for oxygen. Some of them may be like stop. Maybe there's a stagnation or holding there or injury. So what we try to do is just work around that and work towards a full diaphragmatic breath. And it really is just a simple inhale, exhale. We just really begin there and start exploring the internal body because that alone might be very like challenging for some. And then we go from there. Well, that's how I operate. So that's then I go from there with people. We certainly can do the yogic breathing, the pranayama, the quick breathing, the what we consider peaceful breathing or whatever people might think it is. However, the breath work that I teach too as well, I can do the pranayama, but a lot of the what we do too is like sometimes there's something stuck in the body that's an emotion that needs to be let go of. And sometimes breath work can turn into a moment of real catharsis, you know, and then some people see on the internet, like big groups of people coming together and doing these huge, big breathing sessions and they're crying and that can happen. That absolutely can happen. But on the other side, it really is about reteaching the body to breathe like you did when you were born. Yeah. We're trying to get to that space and place of a baby's breath. And that alone assists with the parasympathetic nervous system so much so that like you can start digesting better just by breathing.
Yeah. And I think that's really important for people to get when they're getting into breath work is to understand that actually it can just be something very simple like that, like just breathing properly, essentially. You can, if you want, go down the whole breath work road and do, and quite a lot of people, once they've started it, do like doing more and more of it. But I think in terms of getting started and for people sort of getting past the way it's perceived in their heads, just something really simple can be hugely beneficial as well, right?
Absolutely. You know, just that alone can work wonders, you know, for many of us. It readjusts to like, if you're not into chiropractics, if you're not into certain things that are like a little bit more of a quick acting healing remedy, breath work does assist in that as well over time because it does rhythmically go through the spine. It rhythmically opens up areas in the body like the hip points and things like that and to the clavicle. Like it really does massage the whole internal body once you start going. So that alone can do and work wonders for someone, you know, and yes, same thing. Like once I caught on to how it works and I started to dabble into pranayama and started to really learn and, you know, receiving teachings about breathwork too as well. Breathwork is a very potent medicine. And because of its potency, you want to be taught before you progress and move forward. You want great instruction because it can do a lot. In Ayurveda too as well, they say slowly, 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 like slow process of healing. You don't want to go too fast because it can create more disease and dysfunction.
So in your experience, what conditions or diseases or just symptomatic presentations, which ones sort of respond best to breath work? Are there any that respond best or does it kind of help everybody? What's the sort of pattern that you see?
Interestingly enough, I find people who are under a, I don't know about disease or patterning, but under a significant amount of stress, acute stress, long-term acute stress, let's say that. A lot of people that I work with are usually caregivers, you know, a lot of teachers, giving and neglect themselves in a lot of ways, you know, nutritively or, you know, energetically or spiritually, you know, or physically too. Like if you can't, if you're sitting with next to someone caring for them, or, you know, I work with some people that are physical too. They lift people out of a wheelchair or things like that. Like there's this responsibility some people have, and there's a level of feeling restricted in life sometimes when there's deep responsibility. Okay. That can also bring some disease as well. And the breath work just helps open up and expand their body and their diaphragm and allows some feeling of freedom within the body. You know, a lot of people that do respond very well to breath work are usually people that have never really done it before. They're just kind of like, they have no expectation. They have no idea what to expect. And I think that's part of it, is like people with that childlike mind of curiosity that are just coming in because, like, you know what, someone recommended this and you know what, I'm going to try it and see. Usually people like that do respond very well.
And maybe they're not putting, you know, they're not putting those expectations on it. So they're not putting pressure on it. So it's not stressing them out more because they're sort of thinking, I'm going to do this because I'm going to see this result. So that pressure's gone because it's more just of a, do you know what, I'm going to give this a go. I see that a lot with the, particularly with autoimmune patients where they've been passed around lots of different doctors and it's been going on for lots of years. And, you know, that's my backstory with autoimmunity as well. But I think they sort of have that a little bit more of an openness in the sense of, I think people would maybe think the opposite. They'd maybe think that because they've kind of tried lots of things, they might be more closed off and they've lost hope. But actually, I think sometimes those people can be the most open because they really are at the point of, do you know what? I'm just going to give it a go. I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to let go of all the conceptions of what I think about this, any sort of preconception I've got, any perceived image I have of it. I'm just going to give it a go and see what happens. If it helps, great. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And sometimes that, almost that flexibility and letting go in them can almost make it work better.
Yes, absolutely. And people that have been through, right, like you said, have been through so much already. They've grown. There's this wisdom that has, strangely and interestingly enough, there's a wisdom that comes with this kind of life when people have struggles, have pain, have living with discomfort, living with suffering. There's a level of wisdom that comes with that, that a lot of people, you know, would be like, gosh, I don't want that to happen. However, at the same time, you know, I've been have profound moments with people where I'm like, I'm learning a lot, having conversations with, you know, those that, you know, really are seeking just for relief.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ayurveda and any kind of medicine too, as well, they're working towards with your, you know, client or patient or someone who's participating in this, that the goal is to lessen suffering and hopefully cure the suffering. It doesn't necessarily cure being a human being, but it certainly goes into the direction. And they're willing to go in that process and path with you because, right, they've been through it all. Like, what else could, they got nothing to lose. And that's the, usually the path that usually when you see some healing really do start happening.
Yeah. There's a concept as well in functional medicine that the idea that stress doesn't, stress does exhaust your body and does exhaust you, but that's not all it does. And that it can always leave things stored in the body that are not going to kind of necessarily resolve on their own. Is that also something that you see in your practice? Is that sort of concept that's there? And what are your thoughts about it? How do we release that sort of stress when it has built up in the system?
Absolutely. And that's where I feel like Ayurveda and breathwork merging together. And also, you know, so many people to kind of get to the source of all of these things. However, it's been to my, you know, appreciation of Ayurveda and breathwork together. When I do it together, there's the nutritive ability too. It has to do with diet too as well, what you eat, how you treat the body and the body tissue. It's treating the body like something that is going to be receptive. So we want to work towards that space of creating a place and space in the body where there's receptive. And then when we throw breath work into it, you no longer have that rigidity in the body when there's receptivity. And then when it's less rigid inside the body and it's been nourished, then the breath work comes in, right? We alkaline, we fully oxygenize the body, right? And then over time, it goes to those areas within the body that has stagnation, inflammation, and pain. And where the mind goes, the air flows, so to speak. So we ask for the awareness of where in the body, and we ask our people, I ask my people or I ask the people I work with, I'm like, where in the body are you feeling the sensation? And we work to that direction. So we try to start expanding in the areas where there's fear, pain, suffering in that location as well. So it does all operate together. Receptivity and then, you know, the breath work along with it too does assist and open up those channels in the body to allow more nutrients, more of the good stuff, right? We open it up and then put the good stuff in.
Yeah.
That's the hope, right? And it's a wave against rocks over time.
Yeah. You know, if people are sort of listening and they're sort of thinking this is something that I could maybe try, I could give something a go, what are a few things that people could start with? You know, just simple sort of steps. If this is something that they're completely new to, what could they kind of look at doing? What could they try to implement into their life? You know, just little things that they could maybe do sort of today after listening to this.
You know, funny, interesting. The first thing I started doing for myself too, along with the Dinacharya, I think finding a rhythm of your day is really helpful. Just if you can, right?
Yeah.
Notice and see if there's a rhythm of your day or something you do in the morning to prepare you for your day and something you do in the evening to prepare you for sleep. Whether or not you can sleep or not, I understand there's a lot of difficulties with sleeping, but just preparing your body for rest. Mm. That's usually where I start. In the morning, what I did was there's a thing called Abhyanga, which is also part of the Dinacharya, which is just a self-body massage. There's stuff out there, you know, you can use an oil. And you don't have to do it every single day, just something you can do to massage the body, like get the lymph moving, you know, create movement in the body without physically moving. That's a piece of it. The funny thing and interesting thing is I did that was very simple and small, but really started to make changes was drinking warm water,
mm-hmm.
taking the ice out of your water, taking the ice out of your beverages and eating warm foods, nourishing foods the best that you can was also really a big piece of change as well. I was a big salad eater and it wasn't helping me personally, but you know, it just wasn't helping my body. And notice, if you can, notice your own season. Notice your own changes. It's challenging to do when you're dealing with physical pain, but if there's a way you can notice how it operates, see its own season. If there's changes, see if you can step back and notice that and reflect on it. And then I joke, we get ahead of it. We always say, well, maybe we'll get ahead of that and see what happens if we do something different and see if you feel different. Notice your own personal seasons. Notice the seasons around you and see how you are affected by it and how you can support yourself. And then daily practice of something that your body knows it's going to do. So if your body can predict and know it's going to receive nourishment over time, your parasympathetic and nervous system and your sympathetic system will start to kind of like notice it as well. So your body feels safe and balanced. That's when healing can also begin. The body wants to know it's going to be nourished.
Routine. We're creatures of habit. Yeah, having some, I always say consistency is, you know, small things consistently done is sometimes better than great big leap forward that you do every now and then.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that too is once your body knows what it feels like to be treated well, the things that, you know, we would say, please stop doing, you know, you probably would notice you no longer crave as much. Mm. And that's the thing that we start to realize too, is the body starts to become averse to the things that it used to want to do because it's you don't need it anymore.
Yeah. And we're talking about, you know, the body's ability to heal. You mentioned at the beginning, you get out of that emergency medicine state and then it's like, okay, so what can I do now for my body to heal? What would you say to somebody who, because a lot of the people I work with, a lot of the listeners of this podcast, you know, they've been unwell for a long period of time. And they have maybe started to doubt that they can ever feel better, they can ever find something that works for them. What would you say to those people that have sort of started to maybe almost lose that hope a little bit?
When people come to see me and they're in that space and place, again, I always say they are more wise than I am about themselves. So what I do the best I can to do is I try to the best I can to empower them to make a choice. I just feel like sometimes people feel that, and I can relate to as well, there was a period of time in some of people's lives that you're being told what to do all the time to get better.
Yeah.
You do all the things and then you still don't feel better. So you're like, what am I going to do here? Right? This doesn't, you know, this isn't okay. This isn't fair. There's so much you can go through. I switch it around. I educate as to kind of how things operate and I ask them, what do you want to do?
Mm.
What do you want to try? What do you think? You're here with me. So obviously you're going to keep trying, like, right? Like you want to give up, but they're still trying. They're coming to see you. So there's still that glimmer of like wanting to get better. There still is. So like, if you're still showing up, and doing this, I take that seriously. So what I ask is, like, they have that inner wisdom. They do have a wisdom and knowledge and understanding of themselves. They really do. So I just put it back, like, you know, what do you want to do? Now that you know everything you've known, what do you want to do now? Yeah. Let me know. I'll support you.
If you, the patient now, was sat in front of you, the practitioner, what's the one, if you had to pick just one thing that you've done, you know, sort of for yourself, what's the one thing that you now really feel has made a huge difference that you really couldn't give up? Is there one thing that you could sort of pinpoint and say, that's something I couldn't live without now?
Gosh, that's a really good question. Honestly, there's this, you know, anyone that's been through physical pain, there's a space and place of, like, as they say, the void. There's that inner tunnel you go into to go, okay, what do I do? Even when I was in physical pain, and a lot of people probably have been through, there's those moments where you can actually sit still for a second and you don't feel it. Okay. And there are, I've had that moment. It was small. Yeah. It was a very small glimmer moment. It was a moment where I was in deep meditation and I had that moment. And that's where things started to shift for me personally. That was just me. Having a moment of sitting, and it really is dinacharya, and it's not a herb, it's not a anything, it's just sitting still for a period of time and just being on my own and alone and just going there, going into a deeper spot. And that you can do anywhere.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing that I absolutely am, what I do every single day. It doesn't matter what time, you know, my lifestyle is very busy, just like everyone else. You know, I say I practice Ayurveda, but I'm also a human being on this earth and living this life.
I think everybody's life is busy these days.
Yeah. Like this time frame, like what a time to be alive. So like, really, that is the one thing that I really do specifically say, just that is the thing that I need every single day, is to go inward and have a moment of quiet. Everything else is everything else. You know, you can't do this. It's not perfect. This practice is not perfect. I've fallen off, I've gotten back on myself, you know, and it's never easy to be a human being.
Yeah.
We just do our best.
Yeah.
But that is the one thing that I really do focus on, is that quiet time and that moment to go inward.
Yeah. For the listener who's thinking that they maybe want to do some sort of work with this, whether it's the breathwork or the Ayurveda, whatever it might be, how do they find, you know, a good practitioner? What should they look for in, you know, in finding somebody to work with?
Absolutely. You know, like everything else, you go on the internet and you educate yourself on, you know, who's where, who's what. What I like to do is I like to get a basic understanding of what it is first before I dive in to choose someone. I like to go to certain schools, like this is what I do. I go to certain schools. So if there's like some schools that teach Ayurvedic practitioners, and you just look to see who's part of this school, like what kind of teaching is this? You know, does it resonate with you? Does it feel good to you? And there's a lot of practices of Ayurveda that are very different in teaching too as well. It's also like what feels good for you. And, you know, if there's anyone local, I do like the in-person work with people. Anyone that works in person, I think is really lovely, because there's a version of like an exchange. You know, we take pulse, you know, there's that sort of thing too as well. So anyone in person, and just start looking in your home or in your area, because if you know someone that's local, they kind of understand, okay, maybe you can't get this, but we know that there's like local stuff available to you too, that they are well versed with. They get to know the area, so we can send you places for good milk. Like it really is like one of those things. It's like, where's the best place to get your milk? Where's the best place to get, if you choose to eat meat, what's the best place for your meat? What's the best place for your spices? And that's really where I go first. And if you want to find, and it really is, has to do with like, there, a lot of us have, you know, a quick little 20-minute conversation.
Yeah.
That too is important. And yeah, look at their background. You know, where were they educated? That's a really great one. Who are they communicating with? And have a conversation. Really educate yourself. I really feel that's a big piece, is no matter what, when it comes to your own health, whether it be you go whatever direction you go in, educate yourself on yourself as best as you can, educate yourself on what's out there. So if you are talking to somebody and it doesn't quite sound right, then you're probably right. It doesn't sound right. But yes, definitely look at their lineage of education, and then you'll get a pretty good idea as to kind of what you're going to be receiving.
And where can people find out more about you and about your company, Seed the Spirit, and what you do, and how can they kind of connect with you?
Yes, it's directly through my website, seedthespirit.com. You can contact me that way. I'm very one-on-one with people, so you can have a conversation with me if you'd like and get to know me. You know, you can reach me through my email. It's brett.seedthespirit@gmail.com as well. And I am on Facebook and Instagram, you know, through See the Spirit. I'm on there sometimes, not as much. I prefer to communicate one-on-one with people and have conversation. But that I am there. And usually when I place anything out on Facebook and Instagram, it's usually where I'm going to be and where I'm going to be teaching.
Brilliant. Well, we will put all of those links below in the show notes so that people can find those easily and know how to find out more about the work that you do. Thank you very much for your time today. It's been great to have this conversation. And I hope that it's helped people to think about something else that they can maybe include in their healing journey and what they're doing for their body, and just take maybe some of the misconceptions away as well as to what people think it is. So thank you so much for your time.
Great. Thank you, Nicole. It was wonderful.
You've been listening to the Good Health Podcast. I'm Nicole Good, certified functional medicine practitioner, autoimmune and thyroid specialist, and author of Optimal You. You can find me at goodhealth.uk, that's goodehealth.uk, on Instagram at Good Health Clinic, goode Health Clinic, and wherever you get your podcasts. All the resources are linked in the show notes below. I'll see you next week.